It's time now for Extra Extra. An inside look at the news from Wicked Local. With your hosts, Caitlin Kelleher and Joy Richard.
Welcome to Extra Extra, a chance for us to go behind the scenes into our local newsrooms and hear more about what makes local newspapers work. I'm your host, Caitlin Kelleher, and today I am alone in our studio in Framingham because Joy had a personal commitment today, and our guest is actually joining us from Vermont via phone. We will be talking to Rick Holmes, who is the former opinions editor. He is now retired for the Metro West and Milford Daily Newses, and he is writing a blog, keeping up with weekly columns for Gatehouse, and really just connecting with a large swath of readers about his travels through America. So we will talk to him when we get back. Welcome back to Extra Extra. We are here with Rick Holmes, who is the former opinions editor for the Metro West Daily News and Milford Daily News, and is traveling the country writing columns on America these days. Welcome, Rick.
Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. Thanks for joining us, or joining me. So can you tell people a little bit about what you're doing these days?
Yes, I am what I call semi-retired. The retired part is I can do what I want. The semi-part is one of the things I want to do is keep writing opinion pieces, but also travel the country. So I am doing that. I've been to see the Deep South and the Far West and points in between. I'm right now on a mountain up in Vermont. And living the dream.
Is this the first time you've had a chance to travel the country, or is this just kind of expanding on travels you've did before when you were actually not even semi-retired, but actually working?
You know, I've always loved travel, and I've always been kind of interested in learning more about America and getting around, and I did a fair amount of traveling back in my 20s. And thought that was what I was going to do, was just kind of roam around and see the sights and talk to people and learn things. But what sometimes happens in your 20s is you get a job and you get married and you start having kids. And I did a lot of traveling in my 20s, and then I didn't have that luxury for a long time. So I'm sort of resuming my travels after about 30-something years. As a full-time journalist, and so it's great. I'm going to places where I haven't been before. I went to Montana for 2.5 weeks last month, mostly because that was one of the few states that I had never visited before. So I'm just having a great time going wherever strikes my fancy, and I come up with thoughts and opinions along the way that have to do with history and geography and current events. And I'm thankful that Gatehouse allows me to keep writing once a week and sharing what I've learned.
I think that's one of the pieces that a lot of journalists who are more news-based tend to wonder about, and how a lot of people in the general public wonder. How do you come up with the ideas for an opinion piece and then take that idea and put it into kind of coherent words?
People often ask me where my columns come from and how much time I spend on them. It's always difficult to answer because often it's just an idea I get that is like an itch that I keep scratching at. And I think about it for days or weeks or months or even longer before I get around to writing it. What I found particularly on my travels is what interests me are untold stories that I find along the way. I've always been kind of a history buff, so that I'll visit a place and I'll hear about something and I'll say, hey, I never heard of that before. I was in Mobile, Alabama, and I heard about this place called Africa Town, and I went looking for it. It turns out it was a community that was started by the last victims of the slave trade in the U.S. Just before the Civil War got started, somebody tried to smuggle in a bunch of slaves and kind of stashed them upriver at some land he owned near Mobile, because the authorities were coming after him for violating the law against slave trading. And they just got abandoned there. They ended up setting up their own community and living for almost 100 years with the same tribal customs that they brought from Africa. And it's no longer, there's not much there except the cemetery and a few signs and plaques. But that was a story that was news to me, and I'm sure it was news to a lot of people, so I was able to share it in a column. So there's not always a direct hook to what's going on in the news right now. Sometimes there is, sometimes there isn't. I've written a lot about, a fair amount about the Confederate statues and the controversy over taking down those statues, and just how we relate to history and what it tells us. And how should we express these ideas, and should we erase or revise historic understanding as we go along in light of contemporary events? So there's a lot of interesting concepts that I like to explore in the pieces.
How much research do you do for a given column before you write it, or before you determine what your opinion is? I mean, something that's just sharing history, you probably have learned that while you've done your visits, but something that's more on the Confederate statues, or when you were working full-time, an issue of politics in Massachusetts, or whatever has struck your fancy in a given week.
Well, every piece is different, and every task has different challenges, but I'm always reading. I'm always online. We have great research resources available to us. So if I want to know, gee, when was that statue put up there, and what were they saying about it at the time, I can usually find that.
Doing this in the day of Google really helps.
It definitely does, and mostly it doesn't tell you what to think. But if you're looking for a little bit of background on something, if you want to know the dates when things happened and lead you to basically what Google does is it leads you to primary sources.
Right. I mean,
and,
because so many of the library.
That's a great thing. But the other part is, you know, I was an opinion editor for 20-something years, stuck at a desk in an office with very limited ability to get away from that desk and get out there and see things in person. Now I have the luxury to actually go someplace. You know, I spotted a story up in Maine about another historical community called Malaga Island, and I found a lot of stuff online about it. It was a case where a mixed-race community was basically hounded out of their home and their land seized from them, and a bunch of them were locked up in a mental institution. And I thought, that's a fascinating story, but I want to see it. So I was in Maine. I had a kayak, and I went out to Malaga Island and hiked around it for an afternoon. And that just gave me a sense of immediacy that I think helps, makes the story better. And I also get photos to go along with it. And I've had the adventure of spending a nice August afternoon in a kayak, walking around the Maine coast, and I can't beat that.
Yeah. One of the parts about history that I've always loved is being there and being able to visit the locations, the houses, the kind of walk the streets that people walk, kind of thinking about what they have done, they did with their day and stuff like that.
You get a much better sense of how people lived by actually being there, you can get a sense. I tend to visit battlefields along the way, and you can. I wrote a piece about after a visit to Gettysburg about how you can stand on a hilltop and you can see where the other, where the Confederates down there were shooting up at the Union soldiers where you stood. You get a sense of proportion. You get a sense of how close the fighting was. And I think that adds something to our understanding.
Right, and how close to the, especially with Gettysburg, how close to the town it was and how no civilians were killed during it.
Well, I wouldn't say no, because there were a couple that were killed, and there's a statue of one, Virginia Dare, I believe the name was, where she was baking cakes, legend has it, for the Union soldiers when a bullet struck her through her, or the wall of her house. So
I do remember that story.
But Gettysburg is amazing like that, and there's a place on the main street in Gettysburg that was actually it's now a park, and it's got some statuary in it, and it was kind of no man's land. It was a place where literally on this block were the rebel soldiers, and on this block were the Union soldiers, and they just spent days, firing away at each other.
It's amazing to see that, and I've been to Fredericksburg, which is another one where you see the two sides really were, and the town is still there, and now you can walk and you see the Union and Confederate cemeteries too.
Right. Yeah, I find myself in cemeteries a lot. I'm not sure whether that's just me that's drawn to them, or they're just beautiful places and thoughtful places. But I went to Shiloh Cemetery and had a similar experience understanding the Battle of Shiloh during the Civil War down in Tennessee. Not long ago, I was at a... I'll put it together. Where was I? I did a piece on the Battle of Little Bighorn.
Oh, okay.
And I was out in Montana, and it's a long way from a lot of places, but it's really worth a visit to the battlefield of Little Bighorn to see how they have commemorated that, and how the interpretation and the markers and the memorials have changed over the years. What used to be basically a national monument dedicated to General Custer. And now it's got it tells many stories, including the stories of the Native Americans who were defending themselves and their lands, and even the conflicts between the Native Americans. The different tribes took different sides in some of those battles. So I don't know. There's something about being in a place where where a historical event has happened that makes you see it in a different way and really experience it to your core.
Rick, thanks for sharing that story. We're going to take a quick break, and we will be right back. I'm joined here today on Extra Extra with Rick Holmes, a columnist for Gatehouse, and he is talked a little bit about the columns he's writing today. I think one of the pieces that a lot of people outside the newsrooms don't always want to know is how much does the company or the CEO or the board of directors influence the columns you write and the opinions you take? So, Rick, who influences what you say?
What CEO? What board of directors?
Right.
Honestly, nobody influences what I write. Nobody tries to influence what I write. I'm not sure that any executives in the company care what I write. But I hope some of them may see what I write, may not. But they're not in the business of micromanaging the communications. Even when I was an editorial page editor writing what are officially the opinions of the newspaper's owners on the editorial page, I had very little communication, almost no communication with the top executives at Gatehouse or at its other newspapers. They delegated that responsibility to me to write those pieces. And as far as my new column goes, I'm not an employee of Gatehouse. I'm a freelancer. I have a contract with them to produce a column a week, but they don't know what I've written about until they read it in the paper.
And I bet the only rules in that contract are it has to be family appropriate or not slander any or libel
right.
anybody,
and,
right?
I'm a career journalist. I know what all those rules are. Nothing goes into print without an editor looking at it. So if an editor in Ohio doesn't like what I've written or thinks that there's something inappropriate about it, that's within their purview to not print it. But there's not really much of a filter between me and the readers.
How many times during your career or during the week were you asked that question about who influences your writing and your opinions that come out or the editorial?
It wasn't so much that. It's that there has always been... this idea that somebody must be pulling my string. Some people have a conspiratorial mindset, and they don't really understand how the newspaper business works. So they think that the newspaper executives are in the business of influencing public opinion, when really they're in the business of selling newspapers and digital advertising, and they care a lot about the bottom line. They really don't care much about the opinions, at least in my experience, the opinions that are being expressed by their independent writers. So I do get asked that question. I get accused of it mostly along the lines of, well, your corporate boss has told you to say that. And I always say I've never had a conversation with my corporate bosses, so I don't know how they can be telling me to say that. On the other hand, I got an email just yesterday from a woman out in Iowa, who said she was pleased to see my column about a little known African American civil rights activist back in the Civil War era. And she wrote me saying how pleased that she was as an African American to see my piece in the paper, and she thought it said good things about the ownership of the company and their willingness to welcome more diversity in Iowa. I liked getting the letter, but I had to write back and tell her that I wrote the piece. The company did not write the piece. You can't assume too much, but I'm pleased that she liked it.
You were the opinion editor for Metro West and the Milford Daily News for a number of years, and you got used to the feedback from this community, I'm sure. What's
right.
it been like to expand your audience to a nationwide one?
Oh, it's been interesting and very rewarding, and the way things work with Gatehouse, we are a very large chain of newspapers, but there's not a lot of top-down command. So we like to let the editorial decisions be made locally. So it's not we may own 400 newspapers, but those editors have it's their job to choose what to run and what not to run.
Right.
So it's been scattered. Some editors run my column faithfully every week, and I've built up a readership in places I've never visited. I've got a lot of folks in North Carolina that I hear from. I have a lot of folks around Canton, Ohio, that I hear from, and that's a new experience for me. Not that my stuff hasn't ever appeared in those places, but I'm aware that I'm writing for a different audience, and a wider audience, and I kind of like that. I'm looking forward to getting down to out to Iowa and Ohio and down to North Carolina probably in the fall and hanging out with some of those people, meeting some of those readers and the editors that run the paper and learning about their communities in the same way that I learned about Metro West and Massachusetts and all the years I worked there.
How long were you the opinions editor in?
I came to Metro West as a copy editor in 1985. I worked my way through a bunch of newsroom jobs and became opinion editor in 1994. So it was about 23 years I ran the editorial page for the Metro West and Milford papers.
For me, writing opinions and writing editorials has always been one of the harder parts of the job of editor when I assumed that role. What drew you to being a columnist and to being the opinions page editor?
Well, it's a, like any job, the more you do it, the better you get at it, I think. I had the luxury of being a full-time opinion editor as opposed to editor of a smaller paper that has to write a lot of hard news and then once a week try to come up with an opinion piece. I think that shifting gears is very difficult, in part because we are trained as journalists to keep our opinions to ourselves. Suddenly you become an opinion editor where you're expected to have an opinion on lots of things, and it's a little jarring. On the other hand, I did it long enough so that I got very comfortable doing it. And I realized that, I guess an opinion journalist is slightly different from just a loudmouth with a lot of opinions about things. You still bring some of that journalistic discipline to what you're doing so that you don't tell lies. You don't put things in paper that are inaccurate. You try to be fair, however you want to define that. At least think about fairness. Don't just think about advocacy. And as always, when you're a writer, you think about the reader. And what are you bringing to the reader? And that's really what you're doing there. You want to express yourself, but it's not all about you. It's all about sparking conversations, constructive conversations, in a democracy where people have the power to act on their own opinions.
What happened in the given week when you didn't have an opinion, or what happens now when you are traveling and something hasn't struck you for that week's column?
That's always tricky. Sometimes I'll find a story that I find really interesting, and it doesn't even come with a strong opinion. It's just an interesting story. Mm-hmm. And I found that sometimes you just tell the story. And, nobody ever wrote to me and said, well, you told me this long, interesting story, but you didn't attach an opinion to it. I didn't have an opinion, so I just thought I'd share something. and that's okay to do, too. My problems are when I don't have something that's fresh in my travels. I've been doing a lot of other things in the last few months, and sometimes I'll end up writing a column that's more commentary on national events than reporting on what I've actually seen and done that week. And that's okay too. Although I like the freshness of having a dateline and having and being able to describe a place as well as state an opinion. But right now, the opinions are secondary, and actually one of the great things about not being an opinion editor is something that can happen, and I'm no longer required to figure out what I think about it. So I don't have to sit down and write a column about an editorial about the latest twist and turn in the Trump administration's relations with Congress. I can just let that go by. I'll read about it. I'll pay attention. Maybe I'll blog about it, or maybe I'll tweet about it. But I don't feel obligated to form an opinion on something that I don't feel strongly about.
And I guess that's the difference between being a columnist, where now it really is you can just share stories and experiences with the reader.
Right, and actually the traditional editorial page editorial is getting kind of passe. There are people that care, people in public office as well as readers, that they care what the newspaper thinks about a particular proposal or a particular candidate or a particular election. But I think the authority of newspaper editorials isn't what it was when I first started.
Is it the only thing you've seen change on the through the opinions page or in the world of journalism's opinions through your career, or have there been other major shifts as well?
Everything has changed. You know, I mean, I started out when people really got their news on pieces of paper that had been printed, and they didn't know about it until they read it in the paper. And now everything is immediate, everything is digital, everything is shorter. Opinion spans are ridiculously short. You know, I'm a bit of a relic in that I still write pieces that are 750 words long at an age where most people are limited to 140 characters. So a lot has changed. Newspapers don't have the position of respect that they used to have. You know, we adjust and we try to do things differently. We try to reach our audience where they are. And if they're reading Twitter or they're looking for video on YouTube, then we try to give them that way. Give them our news and opinions and thoughts and stories in whatever format people are looking for.
Right, we do. We are trying to reach our audience where they are, as opposed to having them expect us at their doorstep every morning.
Absolutely. And the audience is fragmented. You know, I have people who say, "Well, I didn't see your story in the your piece in the paper this week," and maybe they didn't for one reason or another. And I say, "Well, you can read it online. You can look to my website." RickHolmes.net, and I say, "Well, I don't use computers like that." I'll say, "Well, I tweeted about such and such," and I say, "Well, I don't do Twitter. No, I don't do Facebook." You can't find all your readers in one place. You've got to find them in lots of places.
That's
right. They have to find you in lots of places.
Is there anything we haven't touched on that you want to make sure our listeners hear from you?
Well, I will repeat my website again, RickHolmes.net. I'm also on Facebook at Holmes & Company and Twitter at Holmes & Co. You know, what's interesting to me, I'm writing one for a print column a week. Sometimes I have more to say than that. And I have a blog on my website where I throw in other stories that haven't made it to the newsprint pages. And in the meantime, I'm just traveling and reporting along the way. I'm in Vermont now. I'm thinking of going up to the Bay of Fundy next week. I haven't been to northern Maine. I thought I might visit Campobello Island and maybe write about FDR. And then I'm going to come back here and we're going to head south. We're going to go through I'd like to go to West Virginia and Virginia and Carolinas and Georgia and spend the winter in a warmer place than New England and then work my way up the West Coast. So we'll be out there on the road, and I appreciate all who are following us along the way, and look forward to many more places and opinions to come.
I will put all of the your contact information and the link to your blog in our show notes, so that people will be able to link and connect and follow along with you as well. So, thank you.
I would also add, I have a tremendous number of friends and acquaintances and people and colleagues that I've worked with in Metro West and Milford area along the way, and I'm still thinking about you folks, and I wish you all the best.
Well, thank you for joining us, Rick. I really appreciate your time, and I wish you safe travels.
All right. Good enough. Thank you so much, Caitlin.
Great. Thanks, Rick. Thank you for joining me on Extra Extra this week. I hope Joy will be back to join us next week as we continue our look into wicked local journalism and how news comes to our newsrooms. Please reach out to me via my email at ckelleher at wickedlocal.com or on Twitter at CM Kelleher. You can reach out to Joy at her email, jrichard@wickedlocal.com. I will give her a plug while she's not here. I hope you all have a great day, and thank you for starting your week with us. Tune in next week.
You can join Caitlin and Joy as they go behind the scenes each week at Wicked Local. Follow Caitlin on Twitter at CM Kelleher and Joy at Extra Extra Joy. Thank you for listening to Extra Extra.